1, 2, 3.
WRFI.
Watkins Glen.
Test.
Ithaca. WRFI Community Radio News is made possible by listeners like you.
Help us tell important stories about your community.
Head to wrfi.org/donate.
Community Radio News for Monday, December 7th, 2020. I'm Michaela Savitt.
And I'm Antonio Fermi. After the headline news, you'll hear an episode of the podcast Audio Interference, which explores the relationship between cultural production and social movements. Today's selections feature part of the Archiving Abolition series made in collaboration with the Survive and Punish New York. But here's the weather forecast courtesy of the National Weather Service. Tonight, cloudy with lows in the mid-20s. Tomorrow, clouds will make way to sunshine with highs in the mid-30s. Tomorrow night, a slight chance of snow showers with lows in the mid-20s. Looking to Wednesday, chance of morning snow with possible rain mixed in the afternoon. Highs will be in the lower 40s.
And now here's tonight's news for Ithaca and Watkins Glen. In local news, the Tompkins County Health Department is reporting two potential public exposures to COVID-19 on TCAT bus route 14S. The first exposure occurred on route 14S on Saturday, November 28th, inbound from Overlook Apartments to Walmart between 1:35 p.m. and 1:55 p.m. The second exposure occurred on TCAT Route 14S on Monday, November 30th, inbound from Overlook Apartments to Walmart between 1:35 p.m. and 1:55 p.m. If you were on the TCAT bus Route 14S during those dates and times, it's recommended by the Health Department that you get tested for COVID-19 and monitor yourself for symptoms of the virus. Testing is available at either the downtown Ithaca site at 412 North Tioga Street or at the Shops at Ithaca Mall site at the intersection of Route 13 and Trip Hammer Road. For more information about the exposure and directions on how to get tested, visit TompkinsCountyNY.gov/health or call 607-274-6688. That's 607-274-6688.
Now we'll take a look at the local COVID-19 caseload. The latest numbers, released yesterday from the Tompkins County Health Department, indicate that over the weekend, there were 49 additional positives and 58 new recoveries. According to the County Health Department, that leaves 242 active cases of COVID-19 as of yesterday in Tompkins. In Schuyler County, there were 12 new cases of COVID-19 reported today, leaving 32 active cases, according to their health department. Three people remain hospitalized with complications of the virus.
And in other Tompkins County area transit news, TCAT is asking their customers for patience ordering new ride passes as its customer service representatives continue to work remotely due to the coronavirus pandemic. According to TCAT, riders should expect delays in receiving new fare media, such as pass cards, fobs, or route literature in the mail, or if recharging their passes over the phone, as this process may take up to 2 or 3 days. As such, customers who need to purchase new T-cards or fobs, or who need to add passes to existing fare media, should plan ahead for their travel needs and place their orders as soon as possible. Anyone using the online store for TCAT will be able to add passes to their existing fare media that in most cases will be ready to use immediately. The Ithaca Voice notes that in rare cases, the recharging process could take up to 48 hours for the additional passes to become activated. Riders, of course, can still opt to use cash fare
And if listeners have questions about this delay in TCAT passes, customer service representatives are able to take calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. The number to reach them is at 607-277-RIDE. That's 607-277-7433.
A portion of West State and Martin Luther King Jr. Street will be reduced to one lane through the mid-afternoon tomorrow in order to provide room for construction of a new water service. According to the Ithaca Voice, the area between Plain Street and Albany Street will be under construction until 3:30 p.m. tomorrow. The City of Ithaca says the area should not expect a disruption of water service. Additionally, there are no detours planned, and drivers should expect to be directed around the work zone by flaggers.
The IC Open the Books Coalition is holding a public forum tonight in response to Ithaca College's provost announcement this fall that the college will be cutting around 130 full-time equivalent positions. However, the college is not being transparent about the college's financial state. Tonight's 7 o'clock virtual teach-in will feature staff, students, and faculty at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. According to a press release from IC Open the Books Coalition, that school also faced a similar situation. But with collective action pushing for financial transparency and shared governance, the college avoided the layoffs. IC Open the Books Coalition is calling on Ithaca College Administration to follow those same ideals. Since the IC Provost's announcement in October, Ithaca College faculty, students, alumni, and community members have raised serious objections to the school's decision. Hundreds of people have signed onto an open letter protesting the planned layoffs. To attend tonight's virtual event hosted by IC Open the Books Coalition, register via Zoom at tinyurl.com/openthebooksteachin. That's tinyurl.com/openthebooksteachin.
The Ithaca Ballet announces that, despite the pandemic, the traditional holiday time ballet, The Nutcracker, will go on virtually. This year, The Nutcracker is being performed in different scenes familiar to local residents. New scenery will be used as background for adventures danced by Clara, the lead character, and the numerous other dancers in the iconic ballet. Choreography is by Lavinia Reed, and the performance is adapted to the virtual format by Cindy Reed. Park production film and editing crew Cyber Nuts presents the performance. The Nutcracker can be viewed Friday, December 18th at 7:30, Saturday, December 19th at 3 p.m., and Sunday, December 20th at 3 and 7:30. For more information, go to stateofithaca.org. That's stateofithaca.org.
In national news, a new study finds Latino students who enroll in a college face a completion gap compared to other ethnic groups in earning a degree. Mark Richardson with the Public News Service reports.
While the number of Latinos entering college in Arizona and across America is increasing, new research shows many lag behind in completing their studies compared to other student groups. A report from Unidos U.S. and the University of North Carolina finds an aversion to debt is the main reason for the completion gap between Latinos and students of other ethnic groups. But Deborah Santiago with Excelencia in Education says the study finds Latinos who enroll in community and four-year colleges also face significant cultural and financial obstacles to earning a degree.
There are a lot of institutional barriers or opportunities for institutions to change the way that they serve this population rather than expecting that it's the students themselves that need to change in order to meet the goals that we have.
The study found a high percentage of Latinos entering college are the first in their family to enroll, and in addition to financial pressures, often feel an obligation to help support their families. Santiago says nationally, 22% of Latino students who enroll in college complete their education, compared to 46% for non-Latino Americans.
Too often I hear this expression that it's our culture that creates a barrier. The assumption is that there's an either-or, that we forego our family to serve our own needs and success, rather than it's the family unit that's engaged in the educational experience.
Latinos surveyed listed the main reasons for not graduating as they ran out of money to finish college, could not take on more debt, had a sudden change in finances, or return to work to support their family.
There are some signs there that we have to prioritize to the extent that we're having to choose between education and economic sustainability for our family, those are hard choices. Public policy and institutions of higher education have a role in trying to address.
The report recommends that colleges adopt programs to assist Latino students in navigating the financial landscape and adjusting to the academic and social challenges they'll face in completing their studies. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
And Rudy Giuliani has tested positive for COVID-19. And the Public News Service reports on whether Trump's lashing out could hurt Georgia Republicans. More on the latest U.S. election news, courtesy of the Pacifica Network and, again, the Public News Service.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory. Rudy Giuliani was hospitalized for COVID-19 yesterday. The former New York City mayor is the face of President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn President-elect Joe Biden's win. In Congress, only 27 Republicans have so far admitted that Biden won, according to a new Washington Post survey. 8 say Trump should refuse to concede. That leaves 222 sitting on the sidelines. Norman Ornstein is with conservative think tank American Enterprise Institute. He says the unfounded attacks against officials upholding the election are, quote, despicable.
All of the elements of the political system that we hope would be there, the checks and balances to make sure that our elections come out the way voters have intended, have worked this time. It's the norms that are being violated, not the laws, the rules.
With over 30 failed lawsuits, Trump's legal team celebrated a win Sunday when a judge approved a forensic audit of 22 vote tabulators in Antrim County, Michigan, related to Dominion voting machines. The case is actually about a very close marijuana ballot measure, but there had been an initial problem with votes, which was later corrected to show Trump ahead. Former U.S. Representative Zach Womp of Tennessee is among those Republicans speaking out against baseless claims that the election was rigged.
It's very frustrating to see the intimidation that comes out of the White House against Republicans that are in office if they just speak what they know to be true. And the truth is, it was a free and fair and good election.
Womp contends Trump's legal challenges are counterproductive.
They have zero credibility, and they're not telling the truth, and they're actually costing Republicans the ability to win the Senate races in Georgia.
At Trump's Georgia rally for the two Republican senators whose runoff elections in January will determine the control of the Senate, he pushed his own election message.
They cheated and they rigged our presidential election, but we will still win it.
Earlier, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, again denied Trump's second request for Georgia to call a special legislative session to overturn election results. Georgia's election officials have been getting death threats. In Arizona, the state's Republican House Speaker Rusty Bowers said GOP requests to overturn its presidential election results in his state are illegal. Here's conservative Norman Ornstein again. He fears that attempts to discredit the election are causing Americans to lose their belief in the rule of law and norms of government.
We're going to have to find a way to restore this. This is an ongoing problem that we're going to have that's going to take us past this election.
With California's certification on Friday, President-elect Biden officially clinched 270 electoral votes. His pick for Health and Human Services Secretary is reportedly California Attorney General Javier Becerra. Becerra regularly challenged Trump administration policies, including ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. On Friday, a judge ruled Trump must fully restore the program by the end of today. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
That concludes our headline news for tonight. Coming up, you'll hear an episode of the podcast Audio Interference, which explores the relationship between cultural production and social movements. That's after the music break, right here on WRFI Community Radio News. Stay with us. WRFI Community Radio News. I'm Michaela Savitt.
And I'm Antonio Fermi. Now you'll hear an episode of the podcast Audio Interference from the Interference Archive. The organization explores the relationship between cultural production and social movements and is based out of Brooklyn, New York. Today's episode is part of their Archiving Abolition series, made in collaboration with Survived and Punished New York.
Survived and Punished is a grassroots abolitionist group that works to eradicate the criminalization of survivors of domestic and sexual violence, and the culture of violence that contributes to it. Together, the Interference Archive volunteers came up with questions that Survived and Punished sent to their comrades. And this episode is a response from Alicia Walker, written in May 2020, and read by a Survived and Punished volunteer. Here you go.
Hello, comrades. In this episode of Audio Interference, produced by Interference Archive, we're sharing reflections from Alicia Walker, a survivor on the inside. The episode stems from a collaboration with Survived and Punished New York, a grassroots abolitionist group that works to eradicate the criminalization of survivors of domestic and sexual violence and the culture of violence that contributes to it. Prison walls create barriers to communication. Through our collaboration, we're bridging this information gap by sharing the experiences of folks on the inside with those on the outside, as well as archiving Survived and Punished organizing strategies to free all who are incarcerated. Here's Red Schulte introducing Survived and Punished comrade Alicia Walker.
Alicia Walker is a 27-year-old former sex working person originally from Akron, Ohio. In January 2014, Alicia was contacted by a returning client, Alan Filan, who agreed to pay her and another sex worker for sex in his Orland Park house. When Alicia and the other sex worker arrived, Filan was very intoxicated and demanded that the sex be unprotected. Alicia and her fellow worker refused what they saw as unsafe services, asserting that Filan had to stick to their agreed-upon terms. Filan became violent. He punched Alicia in the face before grabbing a knife from the kitchen. Filan then threatened both women with the knife. Alicia struggled with him and managed to wrestle the knife away, stabbing him in self-defense. Both she and the other worker fled. Filan was still alive when they left his house. Alicia was arrested and charged with second-degree murder, despite no physical evidence ever being recovered. She was held without trial for 20 months in Cook County. At her trial, the prosecutor portrayed Alicia as a manipulative criminal mastermind. He even called her a monster and spoke disparagingly about her family and her profession as a sex worker. Her defense attorneys sexually harassed her and never requested bond. A jury convicted her of second-degree murder, and Alicia was sentenced to 15 years in prison. She is currently incarcerated at Decatur Correctional Center in Decatur, Illinois.
Together, we came up with questions that Survived and Punished sent to their comrades. Here's Red Schulte reading Alicia Walker's responses, written in May 2020. Interview questions are read by me, Natalie Kirby, from Audio Interference. What should the world know about you?
I'm a lot of different things. I'm an unapologetic survivor. I'm a fighter, fiercely loyal to my community. I'm a Black multi-ethnic woman. I'm an artist, a poet, a zine maker, and an inside organizer. I'm queer, and I was a sex worker for a number of years. The criminalization of sex work and survival is why I'm locked up. I'm currently incarcerated in Decatur, Illinois. I want people to know about the amazing work that's being done to fight back. I'm proud to be in that work however I can from inside. I'm deeply grateful for my friends and family who started organizing alongside me through my defense campaign, my comrades and support hoes, Survived and Punished, the Uptown People's Law Center, Moms United, and Love and Protect. When I'm out, get ready.
How do you access information? What information do you feel you're missing? What information are we missing?
I access information by watching what little news we have access to, the four channels, basically, but mostly through my support networks and outside friends. When the Wi-Fi works, I get emails and access to information that way. Calls are the most important method of communication for me. I rely on Red and Erica a lot for these. I know we are missing a lot in here. We can't easily fact-check the rumor mills that exist and circulate inside. I understand why people do it, start rumors, I mean. But it can be a real obstacle to tackling problems we face in here. I know the media that we do get access to on TV is controlled by the wealthy and by people in power. And so I know without getting real news from my friends and family outside, I'm only getting part of the story or some twisted version of it from the regular news. My mail is censored and read, confiscated or lost. My emails are looked through and approved or denied. I can't get copies of newsletters like Free Survivors regularly because I got a target on me in here because they know I stand up for myself and others. There's just this surveillance. You're being watched all the time. It means what we can and can't say or do or discuss is always monitored. Y'all are probably missing how we're really treated in here. Even if COs are wrong, they're right. The way they, the prison officers, herd us and treat us like we're children or cattle. The way the prison deliberately withholds information. Like, we don't even know when they know or what they know. That's what scares me. When will they actually tell us if the pandemic or another crisis gets in? Will I find out from you, Red, first? Probably. Even if they knew something, they'd keep it from us. I know it. The other day, I was confronting a lieutenant about my personal safety and the poor sanitary conditions here, and I asked him point blank, would you be straight with me? Would you tell me if this virus was in here? He just stared at me and was like, I don't know if I could.
How has access to information and your loved ones changed since the COVID-19 outbreak?
It's scary. I have to ask five different people in here to try and fact check as best I can when news starts circulating. In-person visits have been canceled. Those were lifelines to us. Phone lines are ridiculous. Sometimes you're waiting an hour to use a phone. Then you're only allowed to do that maybe twice a day now. No new resources have been added. We still get bleach water to clean with. That's it. There are delays in meals. Only 50 people are allowed in chow hall at a time, and we've got 110 people on my unit. We're not getting to shop fully. There's limited commissary. Women are going to seg left and right because things are escalating. COs are going hard against people as fears and anxieties take over. Tensions are running high. There, the prison administration, not telling people about these related policies or these release policies. Everything feels random, made up. We're all just reeling.
What do you think are effective models for solidarity across boundaries?
Listen to us. Solidarity comes from building relationships, connecting with other advocates, and the drive to keep fighting and not give up. I'd say to be effective, you must stay connected at all costs. Letter writing campaigns need to be responsive to our needs. The newsletters. Newsletters let me know what's going on outside. This organizing news is so crucial. Getting report backs on actions and campaigns, it keeps us all going.
Access comes from the Latin accessus, meaning a coming to, from the adjective to plus sedere, go, move, to move to, towards. What would you like to see our world moving towards? What do you think is preventing that movement?
I want to see a better world. I want acceptance without judgment and hate. I want real joy. I want sex workers to be truly safe. We should move toward a world without prisons and police that really only hurt us. I don't fit easy into categories. I don't fit into boxes. I want a world without boxes. I want to live in a world that doesn't criminalize our survival. My faith tells me to love and forgive, and that's what I want for all of us. I want us to really love our neighbors. People in power's ego and desire to control us prevents us from moving forward like we need to. Sometimes we prevent our own moving forward because we're tripping on each other. There's a lot of standing and built to be in our way. We want a better world, but that's not cheap. So how do we get the people what they need to keep fighting? How do we get us out so that we can fight as free people? What keeps all us from being truly free? I'm left with so many questions. I hope we can overcome all that stands between us and get that world that we want.
A huge thank you to Alicia Walker for sharing her story with us. We'd also like to thank Lei Sui, Yves Tong Nguyen, Hina, Zoe Vong Tao, Red Shoulder, and Mariah Hill, along with everyone else at Survived and Punished, for working with us on this episode. To learn more about Survived and Punished, visit their website, survivedandpunishedny.org. If you haven't already, we encourage you to listen to the other responses from folks inside. We also published an in-depth interview with folks from Survived and Punished about their work. To listen, find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. In solidarity, Natalie from Audio Interference. You've been listening to Audio Interference, produced by Interference Archive. Interference Archive is a social space, exhibition venue, and OpenStax archive of social movement material. Our work is rooted in the belief that our shared histories should be held in common and accessible to all. The archive is collectively run and volunteer-powered, and we rely on donations to keep us up and running. To support what we do, go to interferencearchive.org and click on Donate. Thanks for listening.
Again, an episode of the podcast Audio Interference out of the Interference Archive in Brooklyn, New York. Today's selection was part of the Archiving Abolition series made in collaboration with Survived and Punished New York. Stay tuned on upcoming Mondays to hear more from this series, and you can hear more episodes of Audio Interference at interferencearchive.org. That's interferencearchive.org.
And that will do it for our program today. Our website is wrfi.org, where you can take out another listen to the original news features by the WRFI news team. And to get the latest on local, regional, and state stories about COVID-19, visit wrfi.org/coronavirus. That's wrfi.org/coronavirus.
The headlines at the top of our program are written by WRFI contributors Esther Rakusin, Anna Lamb, and Fred Balfour. And today's feature producers are the volunteers with our friends over at Interference Archive. Antonio Fermi, our winter news intern, was my co-anchor today. And I'm Michaela Savitt, WRFI News Director and Executive Producer for our program. Back tomorrow night and every weekday evening at 6 with more of the stories impacting our communities. Take care, be well, and have a good evening.
One, two, three.
WRFI.